Hello and thanks for joining us for this WTTW News special. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Tonight, we're focusing on local policing.
Chicago police were found to have routinely violated Black and Latino residents' constitutional rights.
We explain exactly what the consent decree is and how it works.
What I found is that the community and officers really want the same thing.
Chicago's Police Oversight Board taps a new leader as it works to choose the new head of the city's police misconduct agency. And what the push for police reform looks like at the neighborhood level, we hear from local police district council members. And we'll kick things off right after this.
WTTW News coverage of policing and police reform is supported by the Joyce Foundation.
We've focused a lot on efforts by the city, the police department, and the community to forge a better relationship and work together to build a safer city. One thing we've been following closely is the consent decree that the Chicago Police Department has been working under. We thought it would be a good idea to take a step back and explore exactly how the consent decree works. Here's Heather Sharon with the latest edition of our series, WTTW News Explains.
The dash cam video of the murder of Laquan McDonald captured one of the darkest moments in the 190-year history of the Chicago Police Department. In response, Mayor Rahm Emanuel promised there would be, quote, no U-turns on the road to reform. But since city officials inked the 2019 police consent decree agreement, the effort has hit pothole after pothole. The consent decree is a binding court order granting a federal judge oversight of the police department. It was designed to correct the problems outlined by an investigation by the Justice Department, chiefly that Chicago police were found to have routinely violated Black and Latino residents' constitutional rights. While a consent decree can be a powerful tool to reform police departments, it's complicated. Here's how it's supposed to work. After the Trump administration washed their hands of the reform effort in 2017, the Illinois Attorney General's office and a coalition of police reform advocates sued the city to force changes to how the police department operated. That agreement requires the Chicago Police Department to change the way it trains, supervises, and disciplines officers. The department must come up with new policies, which are evaluated by the judge at three levels. Preliminary compliance means officials have finalized written policies addressing its failures. Secondary compliance means a majority of officers have been trained on those new policies. Full compliance means that the department has demonstrated that it can follow those rules over a period of time under the judge's oversight. Progress is monitored by an independent team of experts on policing and reform appointed by the judge to be their eyes and ears. Since it was put in place, the consent decree has been expanded three times to address new scandals and allegations of misconduct, and it is set to expand again to include traffic stops. Originally, city officials had until the end of 2024 to comply with the consent decree's 552 paragraphs. It didn't happen. Now the consent decree, which is expanded to 714 paragraphs and counting, won't expire until at least 2027, giving the city more time to fully comply with its requirements and convince the federal judge the problems won't reoccur. At the same time, police union leaders say the consent decree has made it tougher for officers to enforce the law and apprehend criminals by imposing a layer of bureaucracy and fear on everything they do. After making only incremental progress during the years of the consent decree, some are concerned that the opportunity for lasting reform is slipping away, and city officials haven't yet demanded police brass hit the gas. The city's reform push might not have pulled a U-turn, but it's still far from the finish line.
And you can watch more in our WTTW News Explained series on our website. And while you're there, you can also check out a special section of our website exploring policing in Chicago. That's at WTTW.com/policing. Up next, a look at efforts to bridge the gap between the community and police. Chicago's Police Oversight Board has a new leader. Rommel Terry is now the president of the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability. The seven-person commission's responsibilities include helping set policy for the Chicago Police Department, reviewing CPD's budget, and working with the department on community policing programs. The commission is also charged with selecting the next chief administrator of the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, known as COPA. The agency tasked with investigating misconduct by Chicago police officers has been without a permanent leader since February. And joining us now is Rommel Terry, president of the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick.
Absolutely. So, as we mentioned, you're leading the commission during its work to help choose a new leader for COPA. Briefly, remind us what COPA's role is.
Yes, so we see the work of COPA extremely important when we think about police oversight, right, and accountability. And so COPA is the investigatory body that investigates police-involved shootings, anything that deals with excessive misconduct, excessive force, even if someone is hurt significantly or dies in police custody. So they are responsible for doing those investigations, and following those investigations, they provide recommendations on their findings of whether there needs to be disciplinary action and what that disciplinary action needs to look like.
Has CCPSA yet interviewed the five finalists?
We have done our first round of interviews, and so we will be going into a second round, but unlike the initial search that plenty of people are familiar with in the superintendent, this is unique because we get to choose the finalists, and so we will not be announcing any nominees as we did previously in the superintendent search that led to Superintendent Snelling. So you won't hear about this until we're settled on a final candidate.
And as to that final candidate, are you still on track to send a nomination to City Council by the end of this year?
Yes, we are still on track. Proud to say that we are still on track. We've been working diligently with our search firm and internally with managing all of the commissioner schedules to meet that deadline. So we're really excited about what's to come.
Schedules are always something to juggle, I can imagine, with that large of a body. So Chicago this late summer and fall saw a massive surge in federal immigration agents. A lot of advocates were concerned that Chicago police may have violated the welcoming city ordinance by facilitating immigration enforcement. You know, should that be borne out, does that further set back efforts to build trust between residents and CPD?
Yeah, I would say I'm proud to say we have not heard of any engagement from the department related to that, and we've been forthcoming and accountable in addressing those concerns. We've brought out the deputy chief to speak about the work of the department and their role as it relates to the Welcome City Ordinance and ensuring that they are not engaging in that activity, because we do understand the impact that that can have. And so we definitely encourage those who, if they have those concerns, to share those concerns. If you've seen things, share them with us, because we want to ensure that our department is adhering to that Welcome City Ordinance.
Yeah. Well, one of the folks who's raised concerns is the 12th District Police Council Chair, Leonardo Quintero. He called for a public hearing to, quote, investigate interactions between the CPD and federal immigration and border enforcement agencies since January 2025, and also requested the testimony of Superintendent Snelling and the 22 district commanders to talk about compliance with the Welcoming City Ordinance. Are those hearings that you anticipate holding necessarily?
Well, we actually have a meeting planned with Mr. Quintero to have a conversation to just gain an understanding of his findings and ensuring that whatever we convene, whether it's a hearing or even going a step further than that, making sure that we're all in alignment and understanding what impact we're seeking to have and making sure we have the right people at the table to have that conversation. So we have an upcoming hearing, so more to come about that. And we invite you all to participate.
Absolutely. I know a lot of eyes will be on that, including ours. There's been a significant increase in police use of force against Chicagoans since 2022. Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office recently warned that could threaten the already slow process of full compliance with the consent decree. Do you share those concerns?
Well, I would say I would have to do more research on the findings that Attorney General Raoul has come up with, because I'm not well versed in that. But if that is in fact the case, of course it would, right? Any sort of increase of any type of force from the department can impact that. And so we are significantly concerned about that, and we hope that if these things are happening, that those issues are raised with us so that we can partner with the department to address these concerns, and also with our other body of COPA, right, if they have these cases on their rolls and are properly investigating those issues.
You know, earlier this year, CCPSA raised what you called significant and consequential objections to a proposed police policy allowing officers to continue making so-called pretextual traffic stops, things like expired tags or broken taillights. For folks who aren't familiar with those stops, what concerns you about that proposed policy?
So with the policy, I think we are at a place where we're developing out something that many people assumed was already in place. And so we currently have a position on certain types of restrictions, which, again, with this process, we're now looking at putting traffic stops into the consent decree. So the largest piece is making sure that the commission maintains its authority of policymaking, because once something is in the consent decree, we sort of lose out on that authority. But we're pleased that the department has agreed, IMT and others who are at the table, to keep us with our current role so that we can make sure that we're elevating not only the commission's position, but also the positions of community voices.
Yeah, I mean, so has there been any progress in the intervening months on that policy that you can share with us?
Nothing beyond the existing policy that is out there. We're continuously gathering feedback, so we do welcome everyone across the entire city to weigh in on that. And we're also continuing our conversations, right, with the IMT. Of course, we can't go into much detail about that, but it's still this push of getting it across the finish line into the consent decree. But that's where we are now. There is a draft policy available for people to review. We welcome all insights and feedback related to that. We also have a feedback form, and we encourage all Chicagoans to make sure that they're weighing in on their thoughts related to this particular policy.
Yeah, certainly something I know a lot of residents feel strongly about. You know, you took over as president last month, although certainly you've been working with the commission for quite some time. What's the transition been like for you?
I think the transition has been a bit seamless, right? I think Anthony and I, the former president, we worked well together. I was his vice president for a while. We both started out on the interim together. So it's been a bit seamless. We recently also elected my vice president, Commissioner Angel Ruby Navarijo. So we had our first meeting together last week. So I think it's been pretty seamless of a transition. I'm just excited to implement some of my vision for the rest of my tenure that I have on this commission, which looks like connecting a lot of these different agencies and bodies who influence the overall public safety and accountability landscape, because I believe a lot of what we're hearing, though we may not have authority in some of those areas, we definitely can influence to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the community where those bodies may not have the same level of oversight.
All right. Ramel Terry, congratulations on the new role. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And up next, how police district councils are working to reimagine community policing. Push for police oversight is also a neighborhood-level effort with the help of police district councils. They work with each of the city's 22 police districts, hearing out residents' public safety concerns and advocating for accountability. The first ever members were elected in 2023, giving everyday people more of a say in how policing is done. But what progress has been made since then? Here to discuss that and more are Dion McGill, a member of the 7th Police District Council, which includes Southside neighborhoods like Englewood and Auburn Gresham. Elian Baena, a member of the 10th Police District Council, which includes Westside neighborhoods like North Lawndale and Little Village. and Cedric Hawkins, an outreach specialist at Community Violence Prevention Organization, CRED. We also invited the Chicago Police Department to join us, but they declined. But we thank you all for being here on the program. Eliane, I'd like to start with you, please. You know, from your perspective over the last 2 years, what kind of a difference do you think these councils have made in terms of accountability and pushing police reforms?
I think the very unique thing about our district councils is that we're responding to the concerns of citizens at a hyper-local level. So I think that's very unique in the sense where they didn't have the outlet to be able to voice their concerns anywhere else. So they would have to go to the police station. We would see people going to city council during public comment, during committees, to be able to voice some of their concerns. But now they can actually find us in their district where they're able to give us their concerns, what they imagine public safety looks like. And what the past 2 years have looked like in the 10th Police District has become us being advocates for people who have been impacted by violence, ensuring that agencies like COPA, that our local police department is present at these meetings. I think there's power to that because that didn't exist before.
Yeah, it's an organized way for folks to voice their concerns. Deanne, same question to you. How do you view the last couple of years?
Whew, it's been an adventure. We're at the beginning of a very long road, in my opinion, but it's been great. And it's an honor, you know, as Ellie said, to be able to serve the community, be a bridge builder, mm-hmm. you know, between the community and the police district specifically. But we're very far away because we really shouldn't need a middleman to that kind of engagement interaction, right? And so we're doing great work. It's been every day is almost like a 1,000 miles, but there's 1,000 more to go, and so we're making it happen though.
You know, Cedric, CPD works with multiple community violence intervention partners, including your organization. But the Trump administration has been cutting funds for violence prevention efforts like yours. Are you concerned that could slow down some of the progress Chicago's made on public safety?
So, yes, I am concerned that that could slow down some things for our growth. Mm-hmm. But I'm not concerned as if we can't make it happen. One thing about it, we have been showing in Chicago that collaboration has helped us to be able to get a reduction all the way across the city. You know, right now the city is like at a 30%, 40% decrease, you know. So collaboration works. The thing about it is, when it comes down to it, with the policing, a lot of it is historic. You know, individuals come straight out the womb. You know, they're born to hate or to not like the police, you know. So in this situation, you know, we're just going to have to keep on engaging and keep on, you know, collaborating and helping them to be able to understand how to have a professional understanding with the community.
Yeah. Well, and in terms of that coordination, you know, working with the police department, trying to improve community relations, what sort of work does your organization do? What's that day-to-day look like?
So day-to-day, with policing, no, that's not a
thing. No such thing.
No such thing. The thing about it is we do have a professional understanding with law enforcement, meaning that they understand when we're doing our job and we understand when they're doing theirs. You know, we do have coordination meetings where we do try to bring community awareness together as a whole, you know, throw little events together. So just things like that would be able to help more.
Yeah. Eliane, you were one of two city employees detained during an immigration raid last month. What was that experience like for you?
Wow, it's been about a month.
Yeah.
And like Cedric said, crime has decreased here in the city of Chicago. The 10th District has been leading the way. There's amazing violence intervention organizations are doing the work. So I do want to highlight that.
Absolutely.
New Life Centers and Lots of Chicago, UCAN, and a lot of local organizations that are developing in youth, like Urban Warriors. Mm-hmm. But as a Chicagoan, I have never felt unsafer like I had in the past 2 months when Border Patrol was terrorizing my community. I was unlawfully detained. I was held for 7+ hours. My family, my team, my colleagues didn't know where I was. No one knew where I was. It took them about an hour and a half to realize I was missing. My car was abandoned. And as someone who is a U.S. citizen, so someone who does have a lot of privilege, and I got to go back home, it's been a very difficult experience because my uncle, 4 days before that, a tamale vendor, was also unlawfully detained. And he continues to be in a detention center in Michigan. So I'm glad you asked that question because it's an opportunity to highlight that even though there's been a lot of amazing things happening in our community here in Chicago, the presence of ICE, of Border Patrol in our community has harmed us, has terrorized, and it's gonna impact our children for generations. We have 3- and 8-year-olds speaking about their families being detained, that when they hear whistles, they know that that might mean their parents might not come home. And you know, I want people to pay attention to what's happening here in Chicago. I also am very happy that our district councils have come together to demand for a hearing. I know we formally requested that to our president, and I wanna see that because people deserve to know. We are hearing it on the ground that they wanna know what CPD collaboration looks like, if any, to see if we are following the guidelines of the Welcoming City Ordinance. And this will all lead to a safer Chicago once we have those answers.
You know, Dionne, in addition to federal immigration agents, you know, pretty aggressively targeting Chicago in recent months, we're also waiting on a Supreme Court decision about the legality of possibly deploying the National Guard here. Do you think increased federal law enforcement presence or military presence, does that somehow play into residents' perception of Chicago's own police officers?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm a former National Guards person, you know. I think the idea, like, Chicago communities don't need federal forces. They don't need to be, you know, like, coming in, deploying in our neighborhoods. Like, just the idea of it, like, blows my mind. And, of course, it's going to make people, a lot of people in Chicago, I think, a lot of people in my community, you know, you look at the system as one unified thing. And if you're looking at one person in a uniform with a gun, you know, that's going to cloud your opinion of everyone, you know, including CPD, and unfortunately with ICE being in our communities, it destroys trust. And a big part of our work is to build trust, and it's just every backward step we take just makes it harder for us to do our work, and makes our communities less safe, most importantly.
You know, Cedric, you were previously incarcerated and released after your sentence was commuted. How has your own perception of law enforcement changed over the years?
So for me, my perception has changed drastically due to the work, you know, and not only just the work, but knowing today, just being open-minded and knowing that, you know, everyone is human. You know, individuals that have these jobs or careers, they are all human. So you're going to have some good, you're going to have some bad. Since I've been home, you know, dealing with law enforcement, collabing with law enforcement, I have still seen that you're going to have some individuals that don't like what we're doing. You're going to have some individuals that don't care for what we're doing. But you're also going to have some individuals that care about everything you're doing because you're trying to help the community. You know, so since I've been home, I would say it's trying to get better. It seemed like it's trying to get better. It's still a lot of work to do because, like I say, policing and community is like a historic conflict. So I would say just we really, really need to make sure that we don't have the National Guard come here because we are already in a predicament where only half of Chicago trusts the CPD or only 30% of Chicago trusts the CPD, then we're only going to go backwards when you send the National Guards because now you got to learn two different type of law enforcement ways to understand.
Yeah. You know, Dionne, we've got about a minute left. CPD's had a community policing policy for decades that focuses on making sure it's the same officers, same supervisors, consistently policing the same part of the city. Does that, you know, idea of community policing meet the needs of the residents that you hear from?
No. I think when I talk about community policing, when the district councils talk about community policing, and what Superintendent Snelling talks about are very different things. I think he thinks that means pop-ups, officers on bicycles, occasional conversations. But when I talk about community policing, I'm talking about community having a stake in deciding how their communities are policed. And before a pen is put to paper, you need to be having conversations at community members at those tables, and then they need to be holding those people accountable and deciding for themselves what safety in their communities look like. And that is community policing. I think ultimately people are afraid of this phrase of community power over policing, but that's what we really need.
All right, that's where we'll have to leave it for this evening. Dion McGill, Eliane Baena, and Cedric Hawkins, thank you all for sharing your insights. We appreciate it. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
And that's our show for this Monday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 11. A look at the Chicago Park District's priorities as the agency unveils its budget proposal. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that gives back to its community in Chicago and beyond.